Have you signed up for the biggest homebrew event of the year? Homebrew Con travels to beautiful Minneapolis this June 15th through 17th. Join thousands of your closest homebrewing friends in the City of Lakes for three unforgettable days of educational sessions, camaraderie, and delicious brew. Space is limited. Register today at homebrewcon.org. That's homebrewcon.org. Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, March 16th, 2017. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about homebrewing. This week, the first of a two-part conversation with Casey Letellier. We first met Casey as a homebrewer on this show more than a decade ago, and he's now going pro. We'll catch up and see where his journey has taken him. If you're new to homebrewing and would like to get into the hobby for the first time, check out our website, basicbrewing.com, where you can find archives of our audio and video podcasts and our DVDs to walk you through basic and more advanced brewing techniques. And if you buy any of our DVD combos, you get a free basic brewing bottle opener. And don't forget to get a copy of our Brewer's Logbook. You can use it to log and track up to 50 batches of beer. You can follow me on Twitter. My username is basicbrewing, all one word. We also have a Basic Brewing Radio and Basic Brewing video page on Facebook at facebook.com/basicbrewing. Thanks again to everybody clicking on the Amazon.com associate link on our basicbrewing.com site. Whenever you think of Amazon shopping, think of us and click on our associate link first. It won't cost you any extra, and you'll be helping us to bring you the show, and we greatly appreciate your support. We also have associate links for Brew Your Own Magazine and the American Homebrewers Association on our site as well. You can find our Basic Brewing iPhone app on iTunes, our Android app, and Amazon.com. We have a Windows phone app. We're on the BlackBerry podcast directory. We're on the Stitcher app. We're on Google Play Music. And we're on the the iHeartRadio app, too. If you want to put a tip in our tip jar, some coinage in our virtual guitar case, you can go to basicbrewing.com/support. And thanks to everybody who's done so already. And I want to thank everybody for the great info for our family trip to British Columbia next week, to Victoria and Vancouver. My family and I are doing the spring break up north this year. Tons of travel tips and suggestions coming in of where to grab a pint or two and things to do around the area. And I've connected with Nathaniel Senf from Lightheart Brewing in Vancouver, which is part of a cool collaborative brewery called Callister Brewing. It's a sort of an incubator for fledgling breweries, and we're planning to get together there to chat with Nathaniel and a couple of his brewer friends there at Callister. I'm looking forward to that. I think it's going to be a really fun story to talk about. Most of the time is going to be family time, but I did want to gather some content while we're on the road. And I appreciate Nathaniel getting in touch with me. Let's look into the mailbag. James from Atlanta writes, after hearing Scott Kuei talk about fermenting in the boil kettle, James asks, you guys touched on it very briefly in the episode, mentioning that the kettles being used to ferment were stainless steel. What about fermenting in an aluminum kettle? Well, I forwarded the question to Scott, and he replied, I would not be at all worried about aluminum and safety, but I would want to do a test with off flavors. The science, Scott says, I did work with aluminum while working for Inventors, is that aluminum oxide is sapphire. Aluminum oxidizes in a heartbeat, so most any aluminum surface is very non-reactive. But unless you have done a deep oxidation or anodizing, there will always be some cracks in the oxide layer. Aluminum reacts to acid, so beer, being fairly acidic, would react to that small amount of aluminum not protected by oxidation. Scott continues, generally you don't cook acidic foods in aluminum because of that issue. You can get a metallic taste and a dark tinge. Acid and aluminum makes a black compound. So it might work with no problems, but I would probably be leery. If it does react with the aluminum, it will pit it, and that can lead to problems with the pot, leaks, and places impossible to clean. So, Scott says, my offhand reaction is I wouldn't do it, But since most people's reaction to fermenting in the pot would also be, don't do it, I would say give it a shot. Very interesting. James, from Atlanta, says that he's curious about what would happen if he ferments in aluminum. So he's going to try it with a small batch of wort to see what happens. So I hope he'll let us know when he does to see what happens. I posted some pictures on Twitter earlier this week of my brew session of my take on a grapefruit pale ale. I brewed a pretty much standard pale ale with a bunch of Amarillo and Mosaic hops at the end of the boil, and I added a quart of grapefruit juice at the end as well. And I poured that juice into a freezer bag and froze it to help with the wort chilling process at the end of the boil. And I got that technique from Brooke and David way back in 2013 in our episode on Graf. So I'm looking forward to how that turns out. It smells good coming from the airlock. I brewed my beer on my system from our sponsors, Desiree and Dave from High Gravity in Tulsa. And I got to be honest, I started the brew day Sunday with a big case of the I don't want to's. It was cold and overcast, and I just felt like lying around. But once I started to break out that shiny electric brew-in-a-bag system, my spirits started to lift. The sun even came out. I don't know if I doubt that's directly related, but, you know, it turned out to be a great day. And I've said it before, brewing with electricity is awesome. Propane puts the pain in brewing, and I'm glad to be shed of it, frankly. As the boil was going, you know, I had a nice rolling boil. I stood there listening to the birds sing, which I couldn't have done over the roar of a propane burner. And I don't have to worry about the wind stealing my heat away. And with my Warthog electric brewery controller from High Gravity, I had precise control over my mash and my boil. After I got up to boil, I dialed the controller back down to 75%, had a nice, even, rolling boil that I didn't have to worry about maintaining. And High Gravity has controllers and turnkey electric systems for just about any brewing need. You can check all of those out at familyrunhighgravitybrew.com. Okay, Casey Letellier is now brewing at West Mountain Brewing in Fayetteville, Arkansas, and he's brewing some awesome beers, but his sights are set on opening his own brewery before too long. So we sat down to chat over a table full of samples. Casey Letellier, welcome back to Basic Brewing Radio.
Thank you. It's nice to be back.
You're a reluctant interview, and that proves that you're sane, I think. So, I was looking in the archives. We initially got together at your house for the Blind Mice Brew way back in December of 2005. And the podcast had only been on since July of that year. So you and I have had a very long relationship.
We have. It was fun to sort of make that discovery that it had been that much time. Time flies. It doesn't feel like that long ago.
You look pretty much the same. I've changed over the years.
Oh, no.
But
just as good looking.
Well, first of all, let's address the fact that we have, what is it, 10 beers?
10 beers.
In front of me, and it's 9:13 in the morning on a Monday morning, so, you know. There have been worse ways to start off a week. So
I agree. Yes, that's right.
So maybe we should start by sampling one of the beers, and then we can get into the conversation. So what am I trying here?
All right. So this is the cranberry ginger, and it starts with a very, very light sort of base beer, and then I do a fermentation of cranberry juice, and I do the just cranberry juice, the one, I think it's, I can't remember the brand actually, but it's the one that's just cranberry juice, and the cranberry juice on its own is so like astringent, it's almost undrinkable, but fermented, and then with a whole bunch of fresh juiced ginger root, and then blended to taste, kind of post-fermentation.
So you ferment the cranberry juice by itself?
Yes.
And then blend it in with the beer?
Yes, that's right. Yeah. Which just gives me a little bit more control over the sort of intensity of the flavors. It's a really, really dry. I feel like that's been one place where I've wanted the servers here to sort of like give people the heads up, because this is dry ginger ale. It's our cranberry ginger ale. whereas I think sometimes people hear fruit in beer and they expect sweetness, and this is very well attenuated.
But yet, it's got a good mouthfeel. I mean, it's not watery at all, in my opinion.
Good. that's both of those things are the goal, to still have it feel like it has some presence. And I carbed it like fairly aggressively to help kind of fill out that mouthfeel.
Okay, let's talk about. I don't think we've ever talked to anybody who's fermented cranberry juice. So my assumption, since the cranberries are so tart, that they would be fairly acidic. Is that true? And if that's true, do you have to do anything to help the yeast along?
They are very tart, and they also don't have a ton of sugar. They were 0.026 is where they started, so not a lot of sugar. And I was okay with the yeast struggling a little bit, in that the base beer was so dry that if there was a tiny bit of residual from the cranberry juice, that was perfectly acceptable. So it only got down to 0.012. So wow. not a big fermentation on the cranberry juice, but it was enough. And I wanted it to ferment out. Because even though like I have the luxury of like all the beers I make like immediately go into the walk-in, I could theoretically post fermentation sweeten and have still a beer that doesn't sort of like begin fermentation again in the keg. But I would prefer everything to have fermented out before it gets into the keg or serving tank.
And what yeast do you use?
This one was the Cali. So, and usually, like just for production here, the Safale US05 is my sort of like house yeast. I use a few other strains too, but that's the one that gets used most often.
Well, it's very nice, and it's not the ginger is not overly ginger. It's not in your face. It's well balanced, and it. I get the perception that it kind of dulls is a negative word, but it tempers the acidity, I think, or the tartness or the astringency of the cranberry essence on my palate.
Yeah, I think it gives it some roundness.
It's very interesting, very nice. And what's the ABV of this one?
This one is 4.8.
So we're starting off breakfast with a, and I did have breakfast. Okay, let's talk about where you are and where you've been. Last time we talked to you, we blended the barrel with your club in Siloam Springs. Catch us up. Where have you been since then?
Yeah, so that's been a few years now too. And that was back when I was working at 28 Springs. And since then, I have been out at a brewery in New Mexico, Bathtub Row, a relatively new brewery and a similar size to the brewery here. So it's also a 3.5-barrel system, direct fire. And spent some time out there, worked with some really great guys, and really got my feet wet in terms of like I've spent a few sort of individual days with brewers doing kind of special batches of things, but this was the first time that I had been able to actually be in the brewery doing day-to-day production. So then in September I started here at West Mountain Brewing Company, and this is actually the oldest continuously operating brewery in Northwest Arkansas. Andy Coates started brewing here in 2005, and we've had West Mountain beer here since. It's been really great. I have enjoyed this system and having to plan production schedules kind of months out, making sure I'm keeping up. And it is an amazing crowd of regulars. Mm-hmm. They've been like a very encouraging, and I work well for like pats on the back and attaboys. So it's a great crowd for that. So it's been really fun.
Yeah, it's kind of there's a lot of the college professor crowd down here. So I would assume they're fairly educated and fairly. Unlike me, they they can talk good. This morning I'm not very oh, what's the word, Casey?
Articulate.
Thank you. Oh my gosh. Two sips of cranberry ginger beer and I'm off the rails. I would assume that they've been here a while. A lot of the folks.
They have, and they have told me, especially at the beginning, they're like, we're going to wait and see how you stack up with the previous brewers. But I think I'm in. I think I'm okay.
So what am I sipping on here?
So this is our second best-selling beer. This is the Blonde. And it is just meant to be a very light, approachable, modest hops. This one's just 15 IBUs and 4.5% ABV. I've kind of been playing with this one just a little bit as we go along. And so this one, I actually switched from domestic malt to German malt for this one, with the idea that for a beer that is very light and that its main sort of flavor profile is that is the base malt, that I wanted something that had like a really nice rich grain kind of flavor to it. So this is Weyermann Pilsner malt. They're Bohemian floor malted. And I love that malt. And this is kind of a funny thing, is when the beer nerds are here and we're like chatting beer at the bar, they're like, oh yeah, you've got to brew that Blonde. That's for people who don't really like beer. And that's not the case. I partly, like, at the end of a long, hot day of brewing, when I, like, can go just, like, pull a pint of whatever from the tap, this is what I get a lot of the time. It's just, it's dry, it's refreshing, and it's good post-brewing, post-lawn-mowing kind of beer. And I think there is a place for this kind of beer. I love hops, too, but there's a place for beer being just refreshing.
Well, you said it's dry, but I wouldn't, it's not like a, you know, Belgian triple dry. It's not, to me, it's got a fairly substantial or at least satisfying mouthfeel. And the word that came to my mind when I sipped it was bready. Mm-hmm. And that's the grain, I think. Mm-hmm. And you smell it, and it's like smelling the grain tub at the Humber shop. You know, it's got a nice grain presence. And there, yeah, I mean, there's enough hops there to balance it out, but it's definitely not about the hops. But yeah, it's delicious. I think that I would think that the beer snobs as well as ground level craft beer drinkers would appreciate it both.
Yeah, I think so. I think that lots of times when people get into craft beer in the beginning, they're excited about making that transition away from the domestic beers that maybe people started out. And so for that kind of period of adaptation, it's in reaction. And you try to get away from anything that resembles that, like, as far as you can. So you go, like, Russian Imperial Stouts and Quads and IPAs. And then eventually you can kind of step away from that and realize that, like, simple sort of, like, malt-focused, modest-strength beers have a place in the beer world.
Okay, so here you are at West Mountain, and I spoiled my joke to you. when you were homebrewing, you know, you came over to my house and you homebrewed, and you were quite adamant about skimming the hot break and the homebrew. And my question to you, which I have already asked you on a different occasion, was, you know, what's it like to skim the hot break as a pro?
So I don't skim the hot break now. However, the brewery that I worked at out in New Mexico, we did skim hot break. So I feel like on the homebrew scale, I skimmed hot break for aesthetics. But there is a very valid reason for doing it on a professional scale, and that especially if you have that direct fire system, and that initial sort of like bringing your wort to a boil where there's that that initial sort of like aggressive boil, and you get that really can lead to boilovers, that sort of initial few minutes of boiling. And if you can skim that off the top, you're in better shape. So with my current system, I just sort of like watch my boil initially really closely with a hose, and if it starts to get out of hand, spray it down a little. But skimming is a perfectly valid, if a little bit fussy, way to deal with that. So I don't anymore. I don't skim anymore.
Well, I didn't think it was a bad thing. I thought it was kind of, if anything, kind of endearing, you know, to the fact that you were so conscientious and so attentive to the quality of the brew that you would take that extra step of skimming the hot break. And Brian was making fun of you at one point, too. So Brian was one of the three blind mice who, we went over to your house, and we mashed in your living room with a square cooler on your carpet, which proved that you probably were renting the place.
Well, in fact, I was renting the place. But I don't think we got any wort in the carpet.
No,
we were careful. We were very careful.
No, it turned out surprisingly well. You know, my cooler always leaked at least a little bit with the way I had it set up. So, I was kind of amazed that you guys were without any plastic or papers or anything. It was just right on the carpet. But it worked out. Everything was great. Moving on through the beers.
Yes. So this one I call Blonder. It's intended to be visually as close to the same as the blonde as I can pull off. So it's also very, very light, based on Pilsner malt. It has a little wheat. And so the idea was something that looked similar but had a fairly significant step up, like alcohol-wise and hop-wise. So this one's 30 IBUs, and it gets a pretty significant dry hop with French Triscoll, which are a new variety to me. I've just started using them this year. They have a really wonderful kind of lemon and kind of that nice hay that you get with some of those noble hop varieties, but with like this really fresh lemon quality. And then also Czechsaws, which are like pollen and fresh yellow flowers. They just have such a nice freshness. I love Czechsaws. So still approachable. I think that for people who haven't quite made the jump into craft beer, they're not in that like, yes, this is my identity now, I'm going to put on the bumper stickers. that making that jump is sometimes intimidating because that like there are all these like very vivid, like big dark colors. And so making it a color that feels approachable, but like a little bit more on the hop presence. So intended to be a little bit of a gateway. And again, this is one that I drink a lot of after a work day.
Yeah, it's a lot brighter than the first one. There's still that malt backbone there, but the brightness of the hops really, really pops in this one, and is a good contrast to the blonde, but very nice. One of my favorite sort of newbie comments is I don't like dark beers, and then you
in the beginning, I used to explain to people that not all dark beers are the same, and just because a beer is dark doesn't mean that it's going to taste syrupy or you know, burnt or whatever. Yeah, color is a part of the flavor sensation.
Absolutely, yeah. What your brain tells you before you actually get the glass up to your nose, up to your lips, definitely factors in. And it can be kind of fun to subvert that sometimes with things like black IPAs and other things like that where... But then also on the pale side, too, that you're seeing a beer that's so, so pale and you think, oh, there's going to be almost no flavor here. And then, look at that.
Yeah. Yeah, you can definitely get some roasty characters and some lighter beers, coffee notes and things like that. Using coffee, I've had some light colored coffee beers. So as I should I go in? Which order should I go in? Left to right or right to left?
Let's do left to right.
Okay. All right. The second or third row. It's the second row. Okay, this one says rye on it.
Yeah, so this is pale ale with a lot of German rye in it, malted rye, and then a bunch of cascades. So cascades throughout the boil, a whirlpool hop addition, and then dry hop three times with cascade. And so this has been actually in the sort of like thinking about homebrewing scale versus the slightly larger pro scale. This has been something that was a really interesting transition. Is on a homebrewing scale, at the end of a boil, I use an immersion chiller, drop that chiller in there, start circulating water through, and in 15 minutes, it's down to 110, and another 15 minutes, it's at pitching temperature. So really 30 minutes from flame out to pitching temperature. On the pro scale, I do flame out, and then it's 15 minute whirlpool, 10 minutes letting it settle. And then it's sort of 45 minutes while I run it through my heat exchanger. So for an individual, like any sort of individual, like drop of beer, it does go through that cooling process really quickly. But for that beer as a whole, it spends a significant amount of time hanging out, like really close to boiling, after it's actually done boiling. So on a homebrewing scale, I could get really great aromatics from late, like flame out additions. And I keep moving my hop additions later and later into the boil. I mean, for, apart from bittering hops. And at this point, for all of my sort of like aromatic, hoppy beers, like 5 minutes is my first hop addition, apart from bittering. So I'll do, a 5 minute addition and then, like I'll wait 5 minutes into the whirlpool before making that sort of like last big hop addition, and still it's not until after the dry hops that they really get that nice bright hop nose.
Yeah, I did a conversation with Chris Colby talking about tweaking your hops, and he called the zone between the bittering at the beginning of the boil and the end of the boil as kind of I think he called it the vomit zone. Because you don't get the optimization of the bitterness, and you essentially lose all the or most of the flavor and aroma characteristics. So it's kind of a dead zone to be putting hops and and he didn't say it was a waste, I guess, but are you leaning toward that direction as well?
I am, at least on this scale. On homebrewing scale, I still brew at home. On that scale, I do still do a little bit more. Like, I'll do a 10-minute addition at home. But I've entirely quit those here. It does feel like waste of all these, like, beautiful, expensive hops. So why put them in if you can't enjoy the benefits?
But again, you're on this scale, you're at flame out, you've still got a lot of heat. So the hops are still being exposed to a whole lot of heat for a longer period of time than on the homebrew scale. So it's a different paradigm.
Yes, it is. It is very different. And that, and really, I feel like that's been, as far as recipes go, lots of things have scaled really well from homebrewing recipes to pro recipes. But that feels like the one thing that I'm like, ooh, that's really different.
The hops in this, we've gone from the blonde, which has very little hop character, the blonder, which has a very nice, bright bitterness, and that's what I got the most out of the hop character there. This rye, the aroma is really in your nose, and it smells delicious, and the flavor is wonderful as well. I have brewed 100% rye beers, and you need a giant bag for your three-barrel system. I've brewed rye beers that don't taste spicy. People say that they get spice from rye. It may be my imagination, but I think I do get a rye spice in this beer, and I don't know if it's the interaction between the hops, or maybe it's just the hops that are giving me that character, but I do get a kind of a spicy rye.
I think you're right with the interaction. Like I get rye, like that spicy kind of quality too. And I think the cascades and rye, that interaction definitely accentuates the spice. And that is like a really wonderful thing about rye. Like that's part of what I love about like rye whiskey, that you get that wonderful spicy, oily kind of quality in the finish. And I get a little bit of that in this, and it adds to the refreshing quality of it.
Yeah, you took the words right out of my mouth. As you were talking, I was tasting the finish of the beer, and lingering on the tongue, there's a spice. It's almost like a cinnamony or a clovey kind of spice. And that's the first time that I've been able to identify a specific, you know, because you can say spice, and there's a whole spice rack full of spices. Right. It's crazy just to say spice. But it's kind of clovey and kind of cinnamony.
Yeah. Maybe even a touch wintergreen. Skeptical sound.
I'm not going to let you talk me into that one yet.
Okay.
But
I can go with clove.
maybe after a full pint, I can be persuaded. That is delicious. It's really, really good.
Thank you.
And it's not surprising that you're brewing good beers. But I mean, you're spending time here at West Mountain, which is a wonderful thing, and you know, this is where Andy Coates from Ozark Brewing, you know, established himself here in Northwest Arkansas. So I take it that you are starting on a similar path.
Yes. Yes, indeed. I am working on opening a brewery in Siloam Springs. And this has been a dream for many, many years, and it's now coming together. So looking for late summer, early fall opening. It's an aggressive date, and there's a lot of work to happen in between now and then, but that's my next big project.
What do you have a name?
I do. Yeah, so it will be called the Ivory Bill Brewing Company. It is named after the woodpecker that was thought to be extinct. They sort of saw the last one in the 20s. And then back in 2007, I believe, they were rediscovered in Arkansas. And so there's so many like great parallels with that. And that, first of all, that it was an Arkansas rediscovery seems really special. Also that that you have parallels in sort of time frame to like prohibition and then repeal. And that came to Siloam Springs really late. Siloam Springs didn't actually go officially wet until I think 2010. So like with the Ivory Bill, when you lose something like good beer culture, just changing the laws doesn't necessarily mean it comes back, and that you can sort of have this Ivory Bill disappear, and you can have habitat restoration, and you need to do that. But that doesn't guarantee a return. So this is a name that kind of calls up that kind of hopeful return, and also something that we really want to see be uniquely Arkansas and centered in this place.
Very nice. My wife has got one on her license plate. She's sort of a birder, and although since that initial sighting, they've been having trouble finding any more. Let's hope that that's not a yes. not a parallel.
Yeah.
But I like that. I like that hopeful analogy, and I like the that kind of parallel between the two. Very nice. And you've got a location picked out?
I do. We're downtown Salem Springs in an old car dealership. Car dealership built in the 30s. It's been a really cool building that's had a lot of interesting uses over the years. It was a hula hoop factory for a window of time. So there's going to be a root beer for the kids that references hula hoops and probably some kind of Hudsucker proxy reference as well. It's divided into several different storefronts. So the Poor John's Coffee Shop will be my neighbor, and I'm really excited about that for all kinds of possible collaborations. They're going to start roasting in the next few months here, and so some very fun coffee beer interactions. It also feels like a great, we'll share some patio space, and that feels really exciting too, in that there are sort of great conversations for having over coffee. And then there's other conversations that are like, beer is the right beverage for those conversations. And so having those places right next door, and that, you know, friends could meet for coffee in the morning, and then kind of as the day transitions, like just stick around and switch to beer. And it feels like this perfect, perfect location and shared outlook on great, good public spaces.
Very nice. I've switched to, it says IPA.
Yes.
On the bottom of you, and you've leaned forward and you're pensively touching your chin. I have a feeling there's something at stake here on this one. Tell me about this beer while I'm tasting it.
All right. So this is my best-selling beer here. And it's crazy how much this is my best-selling beer. This one outsells my next best-selling beer by double. So I brew a lot of IPA here. This is, at this point, it's about every third batch is IPA. And this is my attempt, like based on my crowd that is like, they love craft beer in that sort of like initial craft beer coming to the world kind of scene. So it's a lot of like the name schemes for these beers, for the most part. There's just a couple of them where I've sort of done something creative. For the most part, I just call them what the style is. And so this is my attempt to make the closest sort of homage to IPA as IPA was 10 years ago. So straight up citrus and pine with a definite caramel note, a big mouth-filling, chewy IPA. So lots of cascades in this one too, with a big, big dry hop addition of Chinook. And this is kind of a fun little thing. Switch to Chinooks from this little farm up in Wisconsin. And really pleased with them. Mm. So this gets two dry hopping additions, and that's a little bit of a new thing too, is that initially my first few batches of this were all post crash. So essentially dry hopping almost bright beer. Mm. And I've moved those dry hoppings up significantly. So the first dry hop happens when I have still about 5% attenuation still to go. And then the second one, just as I start crashing it. Mm. And I know there's lots of interesting sort of like conversations happening in the sort of like brew science of how hops interacting with yeast actually creates some additional character. So it's kind of, I'm playing with those things too.
It's delicious. It's a different beer from the rye. And it goes beyond the grain bill, because I get, in the rye, I get more of a prominent kind of citrusy aroma in the IPA. I would classify the rye as more of a kind of a quote unquote modern take on hop character. It's more of a kind of a new, you know, Californian new, you know, trendy kind of IPA. This IPA is delicious, and it's well balanced. The hop character is there and very tasty, but it's not the aroma is not as in your face as the rye. Is that unfair or?
That's not unfair.
It's delicious. Would it be slanderous to or libelous to classify it more as like an old world English IPA?
No, I wouldn't call it English IPA. In that its hopping is very, it's very American, Chinook and Cascade, and on that sort of like piney, citrusy kind of direction and yeasting. But I would say it's an old school IPA. Okay. So yeah, in the kind of vein of like Sierra Nevada Celebration IPA. That vein is what I'm targeting.
It's very nice. I could drink a lot of that. If you've got the time, we're halfway through the beers.
Yeah.
And I feel like we've got a lot more conversation to go. Would you mind if we make this a two-parter and pause here? In real time, you'll not notice a difference, but
no,
but we'll, if we make this a rare two-parter, we could carry on and talk about the rest of the beers without me feeling like I have to hurry through them.
Sure. I'm totally – let's do it.
All right. We'll talk to you next week.
Okay. See you then.
Well, thanks again to Casey. In part two of our interview next week, we'll continue sampling and talking about delicious beers. And Casey will talk about the process of introducing a brewery into a recently dry town. In the meantime, if you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com. Please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Check out our support link where you can throw a couple of bucks into the tip jar by subscribing financially to our podcast. Be sure to check out our DVDs, Extract Brewing and Partial Mashing, Stepping into All Grain, Low-Tech Lagering and Decoction Mashing, and Introduction to Wine Kits. You can find them all on our site. Get a free Basic Brewing bottle opener with any DVD combo. You can check out our Basic Brewing shirts in the store as well. You can find our log books where you can track and log up to 50 batches of beer. Check all that out at basicbrewingshop.com. Thanks to everybody who's continued to click on our Amazon.com link. We appreciate the support there. Our featured products this week that were purchased through the link are Forager Go Waterproof Metal Detector Starter Kit, bundle with shovel and metal detecting guide, and Magical Flames creates colorful flames for wood-burning fires. Sounds like fun. Thanks again. And remember, I can't tell who bought what, so no worries there. Just click on the Amazon.com logo on our site the next time you feel like Amazon shopping. We greatly appreciate your support. Don't forget, you can also join the American Homebrewers Association and subscribe to Brew Your Own magazine through the associate links on basicbrewing.com. That's all until next time. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our website is provided by Kelly Dodson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. So long.